Hi, Cardinal fans. I'm Ozzie Smith.
Corks one into right down the line. It may go.
And you're listening to the Cardinals Insider Podcast.
Go crazy, folks. Go crazy.
Here's your host, Brent McMillan.
Hello and welcome to the Cardinals Insider Podcast. I'm Brent McMillan. We're launching this podcast to bring you even more behind-the-scenes access to the Redbirds. We'll have interviews with various figures from across Cardinal Nation throughout this season, and it begins with an absolutely great conversation here in episode number one. On opening day, Ozzie Smith, the first voice that you're going to hear, sat down with Bob Gibson, voice number two in the conversation, and Willie McGee, the third voice that you'll hear enter the fold. All three of these Cardinal legends, kind enough to sit down for us at a St. Louis hotel before donning those famous red jackets during opening day. They talked about the game, how it's changed over the years, and how life led each of them to a career in pro baseball. It's one-of-a-kind access with three very special players. So without further ado, here's Ozzie, Gibby, and Willie on the inaugural Cardinals Insider Podcast.
I'm sitting here having a baseball chat with my friends, and you are my friend.
I am. Okay. I don't know about Willie.
Okay. Yeah, no, you know, one of the things that has always always amazed me is the fact that when you talk to African-American players, they usually come from one-parent households. I've never really heard the story about what impact your parents had on you growing up.
Well, I'm pretty much the same for a different reason. My father passed away a month before I was born, and so there were six other boys in the family, and the oldest brother, he more or less was kind of like a father to me because he was 16, 17 years old when I was born, so he was a little older. But, you know, you have a strong mother in the family, and pretty much that's what they had to do when there was no dad around. The woman had to be strong. And I think for a lot of cases that you may have been better off with the mother and not two parents, especially if you had two parents that weren't getting along. So it was different. But when you're born without a father, you don't really miss one.
Right.
And I didn't know what I was missing. You see other kids with their parents and stuff, and they have both of them. I used to go over to this one friend's house. His name was Bernard. And there was a mother and father in that house. And I thought that was really strange.
Strange.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it, though. I just like to sit around and watch the mother and father together rather than just a mother.
Yeah, they had a good relationship.
They had a good relationship, yes.
Yeah. Well, I know that, your parents had a big impact on...
Yeah, definitely so. You know, I was fortunate. I had a mother and a father in the house. And so at an early age, we were disciplined. There's a thing called a belt.
Extension cord, switch,
and
then
a rope, a shoe, anything they can get their hands on.
And so we were disciplined, and I think the benefit of having a father, you know, in the household, you know, we had to work at a, not that in any other situation you don't, but we were taught when I got out of elementary school, we would be in the schoolyard playing like all the other kids, and after my dad got off his first job, he would come by in his old Chevy, and he would blow once, and we high, because I didn't want to go. And we knew if he had to blow that horn two or three times, it was going all bad.
Somebody's going to have to pay.
Yeah. So we hoping he would leave, but he never left. We'd get in the car, and then we'd have to go help him clean up, you know, on his second job, clean up buildings, janitorial. So we learned a good work ethic, and I think sometimes, you know, a dad in the household, both parents is beneficial, but then on other cases, if the mother or the father is not in their right mind, you know, it can be detrimental. So we were very fortunate in that aspect of it.
Yeah. Now, and I'm going to say this because for me, one of the great things since I've retired from the game is it was the friendships and stuff that I was able to develop in. You know, this guy and I became like brothers. Did you have anybody that who's your best friend that you had a chance to play with?
Well, I can't say I had a best friend because I had three or four guys that I just was really close to. The best friend that I had in the game was Kurt Flood. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he passed away at a very young age. But Kurt and I did everything together. But once Kurt was not on the scene, I turned out Bill White was very close, Joe Torre.
Now, did Kurt, you and Kurt, you come up together, or?
No, he actually came up a year before I did. Okay. Kurt came from the Cincinnati organization, and he was traded to the Cardinals. I'm not sure who he was traded for. But he joined our organization in 1957. And I played with him briefly in Omaha. And then in 58, he came to the Cardinals. And, of course, I stayed down. Then I joined back in 59. But I knew him before I got to the majors. I had gotten to the majors. And we just developed a relationship like brothers. And we did everything together. We ate together. We went to the movies whenever we had time. And it was just a wonderful thing. And then, of course, Bill White was kind of like a brother to me when he came over from San Francisco. And then Tim McCarver was already on the Cardinal ball. He was in the Cardinal organization. And we got to be, we didn't start off friends, uh-huh. But we got to be friends.
Because you were probably hard to get along with. You got a reputation.
That's what everybody says.
You got that reputation.
I want to keep that reputation, too.
Well, you've done a good job.
Yeah, okay.
You've done a good job. Yeah, you've done a real good job.
But, you develop those kinds of relationships with the guys that you see every day. In fact, you're with the players more than you are your wife or your family.
Yeah.
And you do everything. You know all the good and the bad about the individual. And you accept it.
Yeah. That's the thing that I find that I miss the most. I miss the relationships. I remember the road trips and going back and forth to the ballpark with the guys and spending that personal time together away from the ballpark, because, that's a given. But what we were able to do away from the ballpark was very, very important, and I find that now one of the most important parts of my life.
Even at the ballpark, I mean, you get there early. We'd get there early. I'm sure we all did. That's why we probably stayed around so long. But even at the ballpark before the games and stuff, you're in there and you're joking around and talking to each other, and you kind of a relaxed atmosphere. And that was, like you say, the camaraderie, even batting practice. I love batting practice, because it's a chance to go out there. The music's going, you get a chance to go out there and relax, get yourself together mentally, physically, and then you're dealing with a guy like this, Ozzie Smith, and he's in there doing stuff that you, he's in the infield, turning around, throwing the ball behind his back to second base, which nobody gets to see, because you can't do that in the game. And a couple times I came in there on my way out to the outfield, and I said, I got this, man, boom, hit. And I just keep running. I look back, and he's got his hands on his hip. Like. But one time, I didn't want to try it no more after that because it's all downhill.
No, it was great times. And I those are the things that I miss the most. I don't miss playing and competing because we find other things to compete. Golf for me is a way now. I still have a chance to hit something. We hit so many balls in the cages and stuff until it becomes a part of your life, So
well, that's fun for you, but I spend too much time looking for the ball. I don't enjoy that.
You're looking for the ball.
Looking for the ball after I hit it.
Hit it. Oh. After you hit it.
After I hit it. Yeah. You hit another ball, and I'm still looking for mine.
No, it's just, that becomes a repetition thing, but it's the way that we fill that competitive void that we have in our lives. We just find that other thing to get into.
But, yeah. Speaking of filling that void, I don't know that I ever did after I got through playing.
You didn't find golf as...
I did not.
Yeah.
I did not. I guess because I wasn't really good at it. I did get better. The more I played, the better.
That's right. Of course, that's anything. Probably the way it was when you played basketball and played for the Globetrotters. Now,
and Gold Glove boxing.
Gold Glove boxing. You did all those things.
Well, that boxing, I learned that living in a project. We didn't have gloves.
Bare knuckles.
You had to learn to get your head out of the way.
So growing up in Omaha.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, you know, a lot of people think Omaha was really out in the sticks, and it wasn't. Omaha was always a pretty good-sized little town. When I was growing up, it was about 350,000, and that was pretty good.
Yeah,
you know,
nice size.
Back in 1800. And so it was never a little small town. It was always a city-type atmosphere as far as I was concerned. And it consisted of about 8 blocks by 8 blocks. That's where the housing projects were.
Okay.
You know, and I didn't know life away from there too much until my oldest brother, Josh, he ran the YMCA and a boys club. And he had baseball teams and basketball teams and track, and he would throw us in a truck and we'd go out in little towns in Nebraska and Iowa and Missouri.
Barnstorming.
Yes, and we got to meet people from other communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the reason he did it. I'm not so sure. But that's the way we got to know other people. And that's the way I got to find out that there was a life other than at the housing project.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I ever had a T-bone steak. I was playing at high school ball, and we went to the state tournament in Lincoln, Nebraska, which is only about 60 miles away from Omaha. Got down there, and we all went into this restaurant, and we ordered steak. And I went, man.
How old were you then?
Oh, 15, 16.
Before you had your first steak?
Before I had my first, well, we had steak. We had something called
steak.
But I'm not sure it was steak. But it's the first time I had a T-bone steak. And I said, I got to eat this more often. I got to, whatever it takes to get this,
yeah,
I have to do it.
On a regular basis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Our steak.
Will, you grew up in Oakland.
Yeah, our steak was Spam.
Spam.
We ate about five different ways.
Oh, man.
I couldn't stand that Spam. Man, come on.
And what did you mix with it?
Oh, man.
Anything.
You mix eggs, rice.
Eggs most of the time.
Yeah. Rice, cheese, whatever. You can
you
make
don't
a sandwich.
Ham and eggs? Spam and
spam
eggs.
Spam and eggs.
Yes. It was very good. I thought it was good.
Yeah, well,
until about 10 years ago, I tried it again.
You know, it wasn't very good, Bob.
It wasn't as good as
Spam,
I thought it was.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Especially when you get the taste of a real steak.
Bob mentioned about, you know, high school traveling to the different cities, and that is so true. You know, you're in your little city, and you got the next city, El Cerrito, Richmond, Berkeley, and you know, we always played till we got to high school right there in that little in Richmond, and all of a sudden you get to high school and you get on this bus and you go to El Cerrito, which is about 10 minutes away, and it's like, dang, you're in a whole nother environment, a whole nother country, and now you get in a car and you go and it's like 2 minutes away.
Yeah,
but it's amazing. You never got a chance to really travel, you know, and get a chance to go out and see the world. And then we're fortunate enough to be able to work hard at something, become good at it, and get a chance to see the world.
Yeah. Almost. You know, how many years did you play, Bob?
17.
You played?
18.
What is different now than it was with the game than it was when you played? How do you see the game different?
I think free agency is the biggest difference. And what free agency did for the player was to allow them to be a little bit more independent. When I came up, there was no free agency, and you were owned lock, stock, and barrel by the first team that ever signed you, and you didn't have a chance to go off and do anything else. And when it came time to negotiate for a contract, there was no negotiating.
Hmm.
None whatsoever. You just took what they said.
Now would that part of the reason? You completed a lot of games. With knowing that even if you had a good year, that there was a chance that you wouldn't get another contract. Was that part of the driving force behind completing the games that you started?
Well, no, not completing games, because completing games was just the way the game was played. You asked about the difference.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way the game was played back then. And if you didn't complete a ball game, you might get a real nasty story written about you in the newspaper the next day. This guy can't complete a ball game. But today it's entirely different. You don't have to complete ball games. In fact, they have these set up men, they have a middle man, and then they have a
You got the closer, you got the middleman, you got the, what is the other?
Setup.
Yeah, man. When I first started, I was the other guy you don't name. He was the mop-up man.
Mop-up man, okay.
Yeah, and the only time I ever came in a ball game when I was a rookie was when we were behind like 8-0. And they figured, well, what would they have to lose? And send me in there. So it changed a little bit. But I think free agency allowed you to be able to make more money, to do what you can do. And also, we were afraid to get hurt because you didn't have a contract saying that if you got hurt, you were going to get paid a pension or you're going to get paid anything. You were just gone. So if you had a little something on your fingernail or your toenail, you didn't tell anybody about it. Mm. You just go and limp out there.
You limp out there and you go home and you sit in some salt water.
There you go.
some liniment.
Well, I always found out a little glass of wine helped every day.
Oh.
that helped a lot of ailments, yeah.
You know. Yeah, well, you...
Well, in our era, you know, you're speaking about that, you know, I would get the, well, you're better at 70%, 60% than what we have. Uh-huh. Behind, you know.
I heard that.
So you had to, and you know, you at that time, you know, it was like a family, you know, mm-hmm. the camaraderie on a team. Everybody was pulling the same way, you know, just feel like everybody was going in the same direction. So you felt obligated to your teammates to get out there, you know, whether it be like you say, limp out there. If you can go, you got to go. You had to go, you know. Yeah. So now, you know, I'm in spring training now, and you got like, we had one department, you know, the training room, you know, and the trainer would stretch us. You know, we'd come out, Gene Gibson, when he would stretch us, run the stretch, then we'd run down the line a few times, and by that time, after 10 or 15 minutes, they're starting BP. So now, and you know, you go to spring training now, especially in the minor leagues, you know, you got like analytics departments, you got the strength and conditioning, you got the, masseuse, you got all kind of divisions in it now in the game. So that's how I see the game is changing. And I mean, they use these numbers to the point to where it's everything. You know, that's how the game is going to that. And if you don't caress it and own up to it and, you know, take it for what it is, you're just going to get left behind.
Yeah. Now, we were fortunate, all three of us were fortunate enough to play for an organization that is rich in tradition and stuff. And one of the special days is opening day. What does opening day mean to each of you here in St. Louis?
Oh, you know, think about opening day. I always wanted to be that guy to pitch the game for whatever reason. I guess it was the Eagle thing. I don't know. But usually they would start what they consider their best pitcher. And I love being called their best pitcher. You know, like everybody else, I loved it. And you know, you'd see these horses come out, and I don't know, for some reason, I always love to see those horses come out.
Yeah.
Come out and go. In fact, one time, Mr. Bush was sitting up on this, and this, whoever was driving this thing didn't know where he was
going.
He went up over
the mound.
Mr. Bush went up.
His hat
went up there. And the next day, that guy was
gone.
But all of that stuff, I don't know that anywhere else in the country they have an opening day like they do here in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. You can go and turn your television on at 9 o'clock in the morning, and all the festivities and everything seems to be going. And I haven't seen that anywhere else.
Yeah, people. They sleep overnight in tents out there trying to get the few extra tickets.
That's exactly right.
It's amazing.
They were there last night, and I woke up this morning, and they're gone. I guess they got in line and have the kids out there. I saw one lady last night, had her little baby out there, and he's got a bat, and she's throwing the ball, and he's hitting it. And it's like, whoa. So it is. It's amazing.
It's real special here in St. Louis, yeah. And I always wanted to be the guy.
The guy.
The guy,
yeah. You know, it was always neat when... I had one of those trademark things that I guess represented that, hey, the new season is here, you know, having a chance to go out and my trademark becoming that flip. And I always found myself getting hyped for that moment. And some days I tell Willie and those guys that when we played on the AstroTurf and the weather happened to be warm, you got a little bit more spring. And sometimes I'd get up so high, I'd look down, I go, oh my God, they're waiting on me. I gotta get back down there. No, but it's always exciting, and it's different. People always ask me, you know, what is so special about opening day? But it's everywhere you go in this town. And I didn't know that there was so much red. I mean, it's a sea of red out there on the opening day, and it's one of the most exciting times for us. And now that, you know, since being retired, it's always great to be able to come back and put on that red jacket, and it makes me feel real good that I'm a part of an organization and a fraternity of guys that the game is respected, and it's wonderful to be a part of that.
You know, it's not just the people in the St. Louis area, because when I come in on the plane, there are people with red jackets on, Cardinal hats and stuff, and they're going to the opener.
Yes.
So the entire area around here is just a big deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, with the Cubs in town today, it's going to really be.
Right.
I mean, you know, the Cubs.
Oh, the Cubs. Yeah.
It's going to really be. I mean, it's going to be busy around there.
Yeah, it's exciting.
It's going to be pretty busy around there today, I feel.
Did you feel that it was bigger series when the Cubs came to town than somebody else?
You know what? When we played every day, so to me, every day was important. Yeah. I didn't feel like it was. I didn't put forth any extra effort when they came to town. I know it was exciting. It was really exciting for the people, for the fans.
Yeah.
You know, they felt that there was a rivalry, but it was a rivalry that you could look in the stands here in St. Louis and see the wife with a Cub hat on and the husband with a Cardinal hat, and vice versa when we went to Chicago. So I think it's always been a friendly rivalry. I think that it was very respectful. I can't remember of any altercations that we really had on the field against the Cubs. It was just good, sound baseball, and it didn't matter where the Cubs were in the standings. It was always going to be an exciting series.
Yeah, people ask me that all the time, and I didn't feel that I needed to beat the Cubs worse than I did the Pirates or anybody else.
Yeah,
you know, I had two starts in a week. And I needed to win both of them.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Period. And mm-hmm. the Cubs happened to be one. Great. Yeah.
I didn't feel like a playoff kind of atmosphere, or a rivalry, a negative rivalry. Mm-hmm. Like some teams, you just want to beat.
Exactly.
So you get up for them, but you get up for the Cubs in a fun way. You want to beat them because you expected to beat them.
Right.
And you go into Chicago, you got Ronnie. You know, in the stands, George who? You know, then he's by the bus and. So it's kind of a fun kind of a
rivalry.
Yeah. You do something good, they clap for you. You know, whereas Philadelphia and New York, you know, they might do anything. You see fighting the cops in the stands and stuff. So,
well, you know, looking back over your careers, is there anything that you would you change?
My first marriage. Maybe.
Okay. Besides your marriage.
No, that's about it.
That's it.
About it. You know what? I had a great career here in St. Louis, just being here. It was a little rough. It was a little rough when I first got started. Of course, that was way back in the 50s.
Right.
And things were rough all over. It wasn't just on the field. It was off the field. It was even worse.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't think there's anything I would change.
Anything you change, Will?
Well, yeah, my perspective. I would be a little more open-minded and not think everything was great. I mean, just being real, you know, what you see on the outside a lot of times is not what's in the inside, you know? And there were some times inside the game, you know, where I thought, that, you know, you kind of get hurt. And I mean, you kind of get hurt because it's like, what the heck is going on here? You know, and I wish I had which I did my last year, I wish I had stood up a little more, you know, at that time and just voiced it.
When you're talking about within
yes, with inside injuries. Just in the house, mm-hmm. you know. And finally, you know, my last year, I was able to do it. I was able to do it, so I felt good about myself. But other than that, nothing bad, but family. But I just wish I had a, you know, did some things in that area.
Well, you know what, I want to thank you guys for taking the time to spend a little time with me. And it's always great being able to spend time. And when I think about the game of baseball, you're two people that stand out because when I played, you know, Willie and I became very, very close. But since I've retired and made the Hall of Fame, we've been able to nourish and develop our relationship. And you guys are really, really good friends, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ozzie also sat down with Bob and Willie individually for us. In the coming weeks, we're going to bring you that audio along with Ozzie's one-on-one with President of the Baseball Hall of Fame, Jeff Idelson. To make sure you don't miss it, subscribe or you can listen online at cardinals.com/podcast. And if you enjoyed today's conversation, you might also like the Cardinals Insider TV show. Check out local listings at cardinals.com/insider, or you can watch individual stories from the show as well as full episodes at cardinals.com/video. We're also available through the MLB At-Bat app. Simply go to the video section and type in Cardinals Insider in the search bar. That's it for today's podcast. For Ozzie Smith, Bob Gibson, and Willie McGee, I'm Brett McMillan. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the Cardinals Insider Podcast.